You ready?
Showtime.
On May 3rd, summer starts with the Fall Guy.
What are you doing later?
Let's drink a spicy margarita.
Make some bad decisions.
Yes!
Audiences are falling in love with the most entertaining film of the year.
Fall Guy.
Fall Guy.
Fall Guy.
That's what the poster said.
See Ryan Gosling and Emily Blunt in the movie critics say exists to make you happy.
Trying to make it out?
Nope.
Because I don't either. It's not what I'm into right now.
What are you into?
Talking.
Yeah.
The Fall Guy. Only in theaters May 3rd. Rated PG-13.
Purple Insider is presented by Liquid Death, delicious water that's bringing death to plastic. Learn more at liquiddeath.com/insider. Welcome to another episode of Purple Insider. Matthew Collar here, and joining me, and I've made the joke before that every time she comes on the show, she has a different job title. So I don't know, Kaylin Kaler, if you have been on the show since joining The Athletic, but here you are. What's going on?
I don't think I have been, but honestly, I lost track. It's been like maybe like 2.5 months. Yeah, it's going well. I'm now at The Athletic, covering the NFL. Doing kind of the same thing, just at a different subscription site. So if you haven't subscribed to The Athletic, you should do that.
It was MMQB, and it was Bleacher Report, and it was Defector, and now it's Athletic, but all high-quality publications. So I'm very happy for you in joining The Athletic. But
one thing that
you've been working on that has really captivated me personally and fits very well with our brand here is your QB2 project, where you've interviewed many a backup quarterback. And I think that we talked about this maybe right before the season, that you were doing these interviews with backup quarterbacks and you were really looking deep into the QB2s, not so much the QB3s, who have had very little luck this year. But what a year for you. Every quarterback seems to be getting hurt, even Aaron Rodgers last night and Jordan Love coming in.
I know, it's been crazy. And like, I'd like to at some point like look at the stats, because last year there was also kind of a run of quarterback injuries, and I can't remember about the year before that, 2020, but I do think like this just happens every year. And I don't know that even if I don't even know if like this year would be an anomaly, but it would be interesting to go and year by year and see, okay, which starters got hurt or benched, and you know, how many backups started games or saw action, and then compare it year over year, because I honestly have no idea if this year has seen more of it or not. I really like don't have a sense of that, because I know last year felt like this year. Now, like, well, maybe this is just every year now. Like, I don't know. So it'd be interesting to look at the data, but I haven't actually done that.
There does seem to be more. It feels that way. I don't know, because I tweeted that at you and you're kind of like, well, remember this guy, and this guy got hurt last year. Like, okay, touche. But even Aaron Rodgers going out last night, and I mean, the Mike White story is what we're going to get into. And I have also ranked the top backup quarterback storylines of the year. But I want to ask you first about your thoughts on our hometown Minnesota Vikings here as a my computer just fell down. As an NFC North aficionado, as you are, grew up in Wisconsin, right? And then are a Bears fan.
Yeah.
So you have tracked the NFC North for a very long time. Your thoughts on the 9-2 Vikings?
Look, I mean, you know, I think we're all still, you know, the big question, are the Vikings good? And I think it's kind of become a funny sort of like joke of the season now. And I would say, I mean, personally, yes, I think they're good. I mean, I think they're a lot better than last season, obviously. And they are the top of the NFC North, and that's really what matters. There's hardly any competition for them within the division, which is certainly something I did not see playing out this season. I thought the Packers would definitely at least be up there, you know, in competition with them, but they've got a really healthy lead there. So, you know, I think they will obviously make the postseason. And I think the difficult part about it is, you know, the NFC, I don't see them in the same tier as the Eagles, the Cowboys, and even the Niners. Like, I feel like that's kind of the top tier of the NFC. And right now I don't see the Vikings in that top tier. I think they're like right below it. But anything can happen in the playoffs. So, you know, we'll see. We'll see. But I do think the Niners, like right now, I feel really into the Niners, and the kind of postseason run that they could make. So I kind of see them as like being a little bit having an edge over the Vikings. But I mean, it's been really fun to see like personality from Kirk Cousins and also just like, you know, winning. And, you know, Justin Jefferson is freaking insane, obviously. So they have been a really fun team to watch.
Yeah, I think that's really the biggest thing is there's a conversation about where they rank in a lot of statistical categories and how this is going to play out when you get to the playoffs. But then sort of a way that we've been looking at on the show is kind of a ride the wave for fans, because this has been a really entertaining year for them. And even the last time they were in the playoffs, 2019, it was sort of a pit of misery for most of that season. It was like Stephon Diggs saying there's truth to all rumors, so he wanted to be traded. Right. And there was still a lot of Mike Zimmer and Kirk Cousins tension. And then every big game that they faced, they fell apart that year. So then when they got to the playoffs, even winning in the playoffs was, I think, surprising even to people in the organization because they had come apart so many times. But this year they go to Buffalo, find a way to get a win, and then legitimately earn the win against New England, where their offense really drove their success in Justin Jefferson. And with the Jefferson stuff, it's like, is he better than Randy Moss? Is he not? It's like, maybe just enjoy what you have here, because right. There are very few times you ever get to see a player like this in his absolute prime. So I don't really know. I mean, I think that I would put those teams that you mentioned ahead of the Vikings. San Francisco's a little dodgy, but I think that they are ahead with Jimmy Garoppolo. But the Vikings are definitely better than the other tier of teams, which is your Seattle, your New York Giants. Yes. So you kind of are like in the dead middle of the playoff race.
Yeah. I would say, yeah, I think I would agree that I think the Vikings have the edge over the Giants. Because I would honestly, I think I'd rather have Kirk than Daniel Jones. As my quarterback. So yeah, I think, Giants would be right under there. Seahawks definitely as well. Buccaneers down below that. It'll be interesting. And like, even like the Commanders, I mean, sure, I'm sure we'll get to that later. Because I'm assuming that's probably one of your backup storylines, but I mean, I don't think they're going to make it to the postseason, but they are still alive and they are still kind of kicking down there at the bottom, in a very competitive division. So that'll be interesting to see what happens to them.
The Taylor Heineke story. And it is funny that like the only game that they lost was against the Vikings recently, and they were winning in that game in the fourth quarter. I mean, I do think that their defense is legit. It's just always kind of the question of how far you can ride a defense. But you mentioned last year in the playoffs, and I think that there's less confidence going into the playoffs about what we know about teams than maybe ever, because of the way that things are structured now with only one team getting that bye. It feels more random. And when you look at last year, it's a pair of four seeds going to the Super Bowl. So if you're the Vikings and we're saying like, well, it feels like you're a tier below, that doesn't mean that you can't beat those teams because of how weird, like think about Dallas getting beaten by the 49ers.
Yeah.
There's a punt block in Green Bay that costs the Green Bay Packers there. And it just this year, when you look at point differentials and how many close games there have been, even yesterday, what pure madness that entire day was with the Jaguars coming back. It just feels like this year we really have no command over what's going to happen.
Right. And I'm not going to get this stat right, but I don't remember how many like one score games the Vikings were in last year that they lost, but they've come out on the other side of that this year. And so it seems like, and I mean, the Buffalo game and as a great example of the luck factor being on Minnesota's side, more, it seems like more this year than it has been last year. So, I mean, that those types of plays, as you just mentioned, you know, the Dallas Niners game last year, which was the most insane ending ever because the players all together collectively forgot that they cannot spot the ball themselves, and then the clock ran out. So like, I mean, that kind of stuff is what matters in the postseason, where the teams are so close in skill level and talent. So really anything can happen. And so I think it really comes down to like how well coached you are in the postseason. And I think one thing, I think the NFC is definitely a little bit more wide open. I mean, not more wide open, like the AFC, when you look at the AFC, what will probably be the postseason field, it's just like all of the teams are so good. Whereas I feel like in the NFC, it's a little bit more, like the teams are closer together, and there's less like elite teams in the NFC than there is in the AFC. So I do think that kind of leaves more room for a team like the Vikings or a team like the Giants that is kind of in the second or third tier.
Yeah, there's really only three or four teams in the entire NFC that could go over and play in the AFC. Like that's how bad it is. I wanted to ask you too, before we get into some of the Mike White and the backup quarterback stuff, about the Bears and Justin Fields and what your takeaway is there, because I mean, the Bears could very well sit Justin Fields the rest of the year and get the number two overall draft pick. I mean, it could really be, if they just lose the rest of the way with former Viking Trevor Siemian. Every former Viking has played this year, the backup quarterbacks, Teddy Heineke, Keenum almost did, but we'll also have that on my list.
Right.
But I guess I wonder where you feel like that organization is, because it seems like just the four games of Justin Fields where he realized, oh, I am very fast. Yeah. That almost is a victory for the Bears for their entire season.
Yeah, I think Justin has definitely done enough. Like, I don't think he or they, the coaching staff, should feel like they need to like push him and rush him out there again. Like, I think they should definitely take their time with his, what was it, dislocated left shoulder? I don't remember the specifics of the injury. Yeah. I mean, they should definitely take their time and let him get better from that. And, you know, if he can play again in 3 weeks, I guess you can send him back out there, but, you know, just so he can keep learning and working through some kinks, because I do think he's still in that development phase for sure. Cause we saw him, you know, pretty much improving every week. You know, it's interesting because I think he's done enough this season. I don't think he needs to come back out there and like, you know, I think the coaching staff knows, okay, yeah, we've got our quarterback here. Like this is our quarterback for, you know, the future, the near future, whatever you want to call it. Like, I think he's done enough improving himself in a way that he didn't do last year. So that's really fun and exciting to see that. And like, we've been seeing his development. But I think the one thing that like still worries me about him is you look at some of the, you know, there's everyone's like, oh, they need to improve the offensive line. And they certainly do, but he also just like doesn't, a lot of it is on him. And like, yes, he should be leaning on, he should be using his speed, absolutely, but he's leaning on it too much because he's not getting rid of the ball. Like, even on like a screen pass, he'll be slow to get rid of it, and he'll just like opt to scramble instead. And everyone's like, oh, the offensive line isn't helping him. But I mean, what are they supposed to do in that situation? And there's several plays like that every game where you're like, come on, like, dump it off. It's right there. The running back's open. So I think that's an area he still needs to grow in. So like, if he does, you know, if his shoulder does get better, like I could see like him coming back, just continuing to work on that stuff, like the timing and the trust in the players that he's playing with. But yeah, I mean, I don't know. I certainly would not rush him back in any way.
It really feels like also 3 years is what you need for every young quarterback, that the first season, totally throw that out the window with almost everyone. Like the all-time examples are like Troy Aikman, Peyton Manning. Those guys weren't really very good in their first seasons.
Right.
Second season, I looked at this, that even through 2 years, overall, the stats like don't really tell the story, because even Matthew Stafford and Eli Manning were pretty rough through their first 2 years. Josh Allen is another example of that. And then year three is when it really started to take off. Not everybody could be Patrick Mahomes. That's like MVP level right away when they come in year two. And I think what we've seen it from Fields, that they can have a lot of confidence that he can at least win games, and he's done enough to win games. They're just horrific on defense. And when you trade away all your best players, I mean, you're probably not going to succeed there. But if they stay at the top of the draft, it makes a lot of sense to get whoever the best pass rusher is. I think Will Anderson from Alabama is probably a guy that they're going to be looking at. Not that I'm into draft season yet, but I've just seen him play a few times and been like, he seems good. So I feel like the Bears are in that golden position of, you know who your quarterback is and your salary cap situation is right. And even though they are at the bottom of the league, they
they're
could
spending
spend,
like no money right now.
Right.
It's insane.
They could spend a ton next year in the offseason and then be a completely different football team.
Yeah.
I mean, I know we're down the road here and, you know, the more important things are the playoff race for the Vikings in our world, but it's one of those things that's really interesting to me because these two organizations took two different paths. The Vikings decided, hey, we're going to try to win. And the Bears said, hey, we're absolutely going to try not to win. And it's all worked for them. It's like they have their quarterback, they have their salary cap situation, and now they're kind of good to take that trajectory of many other teams that have built around a rookie quarterback contract.
Yeah, they're in a, it's certainly a looking forward to next year scenario for sure. And I don't know, you might be underselling Trevor Siemian a little bit. Like they could win some games with him. So I'm just going to say, you know, he won. I do think he went 0-4 last year in New Orleans. So if I remember right. So it might be a big ask, especially with that defense right now. But yeah, you know, we'll see. We'll see what happens.
Didn't Trevor Siemian go 9-7 with Gary? I mean, does that not tell you how great Gary Kubiak is at his job?
Yeah.
That he had a winning record with Trevor Siemian?
Yeah.
Come on. No wonder they gave him an iPad at the ranch to dial up the first 15 plays last year.
Right. I am a little disappointed we didn't get to see Nathan Peterman, though, because I was like, that was weird. Like, oh, Trevor's not playing. Nathan Peterman's playing. Oh, no. Trevor's fine. He's going to play. And I was like, oh, my God, Nathan Peterman, let's go. Because, I mean, I haven't requested an interview with him, but he fascinates me because it's like, how do you, like, be known for anything other than throwing, was it five or four? It's five, right?
I think it was five. Yeah.
Then throwing five interceptions in one game. Like, where do you go from there? Interesting. I would love to ask him about that and, like, how he, like, rebuilds his identity.
Usually you go to the USFL.
Yeah, but right.
I mean, I don't know how he's still in the league. I mean, it really is remarkable. And, I mean, there's got to be a lot of USFL quarterbacks who are like, what? That guy has a job? But also, again, your show is not QB3 for a reason, because once you get to QB3, it gets pretty dark, and that's where Nathan Peterman shows up. But, I mean, it's funny. Like, you look at Nathan Peterman or someone like Jake Fromm, it would be really fascinating to talk to quarterbacks who played once or twice and were absolutely horrendous. Terrible. Like, remember Ben DiNucci? Like, oh, they're starting this exciting young player, Ben DiNucci. And it was like the worst thing you've ever seen. Like, oh, okay, let's just not ever do that again.
Right. It's like, I mean, I talked to Charlie Whitehurst and he was like, kind of, I mean, he's not that really, but like the two, I think he had two starts in Seattle and like they both went badly. And then he had one game that was really good, but he was like, yeah, like when I finally got my chance, like, I played about as bad as I could. And I was like, well, that's a refreshing dose of honesty. But it is interesting of like, how do you move on? And then like, how many times do you get asked about that by different coaching staffs or different, you know, scouting staffs that are looking at you to add to their roster? Like, do they just like not bring it up? Or is it still a thing that haunts you for years? I don't know.
Folks, the more I talk about Liquid Death here on the show, the more I'm starting to see it everywhere. Just the other day, I was watching a chess tournament presented by Liquid Death, and at first glance, it looked like the players might have been playing drunk chess with beers, but no, that is Liquid Death Mountain Water in the tall boy can. The reason that this delicious water comes in such a large can is because they're trying to bring death to plastic. Most plastics still end up in landfills because they are not profitable to recycle, unlike aluminum. aluminum, but Liquid Death is giving 10% of their profits to end plastic bottles. The best part for you, of course, is that it gets colder faster than plastic in the refrigerator too. So check it out. It's your local grocery store water aisle at Hy-Vee, Target, Whole Foods, and lots of other stores. You can see them at liquiddeath.com/insider. That's liquiddeath.com/insider.
Get ready for the greatest roast of all time. The Roast of Tom Brady. A Netflix live event happening May 5th. Hosted by Kevin Hart. The seven-time world champion gets his cleats held to the fire by famous friends and frenemies on an unforgettable night where everything is fair game. Tune in on May 5th at 5 p.m. Pacific time for The Roast of Tom Brady. Live only on Netflix.
Hey there. Did you know Kroger always gives you savings and rewards on top of our lower than low prices? And when you download the Kroger app, you'll enjoy over $500 in savings every week with digital coupons. And don't forget fuel points to help you save up to $1 per gallon at the pump. Want to save even more? With a Boost membership, you'll get double fuel points and free delivery. So shop and save big at Kroger today. Kroger, fresh for everyone. Savings may vary by state. Restrictions apply. See site for details.
I think that teams probably understand that certain guys are just practice quarterbacks.
Yeah.
And those quarterbacks, the ones who realize it themselves, actually end up staying in the league for a long time. But the guys who don't realize it, they end up in the XFL still trying to live the dream because they won't just accept that, hey, my role is right. being a backup quarterback who basically should never play, but they need quarterbacks to practice in the NFL. I mean, they have outside linebackers coaches. So of course they have quarterbacks who just practice right. and are not ever expected to play, but it is interesting. It's sort of like, I played a little bit of pickup basketball or like a rec league 2 or 3 years ago. And we were playing, and I consider myself a decent little basketballer. So we're playing along. And in the other gym, it was one of those that has like three courts next to each other. There was the A-level league that had like former D1 players and stuff. So we're dribbling and passing to each other and stuff. We look over there, they're dunking like boom. And we're going like, okay, so I'm not actually good at this.
Yeah. No.
you know, our little squad would lose 100-0 versus right. the former Gophers over there. Right. So you know what? We're just going to have fun. And I feel like the guys who recognize, hey, I'm never going to be Favre if I just hang around in this league, a lot of times it ends up working out really well for them.
Yeah, and they can still make a lot of money doing that, which is the crazy part about it.
Unlike my rec league basketball career, which actually cost me $56.
I was going to say, probably made nothing from that.
So we need to talk about Mike White, since the Vikings are playing Mike White. You interviewed Mike White without knowing that Zach Wilson was going to get benched, although, you know,
Maybe could have guessed that. I think we all kind of knew. My editor was like, or my producer on this podcast, he was like, wow, it's so crazy how this is all playing out. And I was like,
is it though?
It's actually not. And like, when I picked the guest for QB2, like, I can probably say this, this week is going to be Kyle Allen. And Kyle Allen started on Sunday. And I picked him because I talked to him during training camp. He's very interesting, very smart. So like, I try to scout them a little bit in terms of like, do you like to talk? Most of them do though, because it's kind of like a personality trait where they're like very, smart and, like to get into the details and things. So he fit the bill in that way. But then I was also like, Davis Mills is like not going to last this season. Like, I mean, this is a bad team and like, he is not really their quarterback of the future in any way. So I'm like, okay, that could be kind of smart because I feel like by the time I run this, like Kyle might be playing. And then that worked out too. And so my producer was like, oh, crazy how this is playing out. And I'm like, it's not. It's actually not.
Not if you're playing 3D chess with the backup quarterbacks like you are.
It's actually part of the whole plan here. But yeah, the writing was clearly on the wall for Zach Wilson and Mike White. Although I will say, I mean, it's interesting how if you just look at what's happened in New York with the quarterback role shifting. So Joe Flacco started the season when Wilson was hurt. I think he started 3 games, what did he go? 1-2, I think. So then Wilson comes back and then they start winning So for the first few weeks, it was kind of like, oh, this is fine, you know, and then it became very obvious that Zach was not playing well and that, you know, the drama with Garrett Wilson there and just kind of the team very clearly sort of shifting against him and like not wanting him to be their starter. But in the midst of that, Robert Saleh demoted Joe Flacco to QB3 and promoted Mike White to QB2. And it was sort of interesting the way that he did it because it was on a Sunday and he actually had four quarterbacks pulled up because they had to elevate Chris Streveler from the practice squad because I think they thought somebody was going to try to steal Streveler from them. They didn't want to lose him. Or maybe they were going to try to like trade Flacco or something. I don't know. But like it was very weird because they had like four quarterbacks pulled up on a Sunday. Only two of them dressed. It was Mike and Zach. But Strev was off the practice squad. Now he's back on the practice squad. But anyway, so that was strange. And then like Robert Saleh the next day was like, oh yeah, we want to see what we have in Mike. Like we want him as a QB2 because if he has the opportunity, like we still want to learn more about him essentially. And we know what we need to know about Joe. You know, Joe is Joe. And so we need to know what we have in Mike White. And so I thought that was kind of interesting, especially because you have a winning team, like your defense and pretty much the rest of your offense is like ready to win games and make a postseason run. So it's kind of interesting that you would put your faith in a quarterback that you still want to learn things about instead of Joe Flacco, who like you can probably know exactly what you need to do with him, how to game plan with him, how to run the offense with him. And then, you know, just hope your defense continues to play at a high level and all of that. So I thought that was kind of interesting that, you know, you are taking what should be a postseason team and putting it in the hands of a quarterback that you still want to learn about. But on the other hand, like, I do think Mike gives them, you know, like he's kind of like full throttle and like gives them more of an explosive passing game. And like Garrett Wilson is so good. Like that was really cool to kind of see what they could do with him and realize like, okay, he's not being really a prima donna here. Like he really needs to get the ball.
Right. I know that. I mean, it was a Bears defense that is truly horrific. Yeah. So there is that, but also if you can just with someone like Garrett Wilson, drop back and deliver play action passes. I mean, you're going to be way better than Zach Wilson. It's not like Zach Wilson had what, say, Justin Fields had last year, which was Matt Nagy and a whole barrel of nothing. This is like you've got playmakers, you've got an offensive system that has worked around the league, and even I think a respectable offensive coordinator. It was pretty clear that Zach Wilson just wasn't doing his job. And from the reaction of the rest of the team, everybody knew it. Like everybody could not wait for this guy to get benched. It seemed like they were just waiting for him to sort of step on his own foot in a press conference and then be like, you're out, which it was one of the dumber answers I think I've ever seen. Did you let your team down by scoring 3 points? No. What? Are you a dummy? And he was giving arrogant answers even early in the week, because I follow a bunch of Jets writers because it's hilarious. But I mean, he was even mocking a reporter like, oh, I guess you should coach the team or whatever. It's like, excuse me, bro. What? Yeah. So Mike White, if you are just a professional Case Keenum like quarterback, you should be able to win a lot of games with that. And I think that this was a bad break for the Vikings, the timing on this, because you face somebody who can at least deliver the football. And hey, the Vikings are 31st in yards allowed.
Exactly. It's exactly right. And like, you know, I think it's really interesting. I was asking Mike, obviously the Bears, as you mentioned, presented a very allowable, a very simple, easy test for him to get his feet wet out there again as a starter. But I was asking Mike, I was like, you know, when we see an interim head coach take over, the team usually wins. And it doesn't usually last for the whole rest of the season, but they will usually win that first game and maybe even the second. And again, I don't have the numbers on that, but it's just kind of like a phenomenon. So I asked Mike in our interview, I was like, you ever thought about that? Like, is there a similar phenomenon with backup quarterbacks? And when they come in, they win because it's just someone new to rally around. It's like a new energy. And he was like, that's really interesting. He's like, I never really thought about that. But now that you point that out, like, it's it kind of tracks. And then we see him come in on Sunday and like have a really good game, and everyone on that team very clearly like just loves him. And I think you've seen the same thing with Taylor Heinicke. It's almost like they're just good because they're not the starter. Like Mike White is good because he's not Zach Wilson. Taylor Heinicke is good because he's not Carson Wentz. Like, they don't have to be, you know, Tom Brady or Aaron Rodgers. Like, they don't have to be elite. They just have to be not the person that they replaced, that everyone was, you know, tired of, annoyed with, mad at, what, you know, whatever you want to say, whatever verb or adjective you want to throw in there. Like, they are popular and, you know, liked because they're not the starter. So it really could be anybody that's not that person. So Mike White is doing a really good job with that. And yeah, I mean, it'll be, I think he can do it again against Minnesota. And we'll see how the Vikings do against the Jets defense, which is really good as well. But yeah, I don't know. I'm rooting for Mike, and they have the Bills also, I think, in like maybe, is it the one after the Vikings? I'm not sure, but they have the Bills coming up again soon. And that was the team last year that he threw 4 interceptions against when they had the number one defense. And so, you know, we'll see. We'll see if you can learn from that experience this year. But yeah, I mean, I think the dialogue around Zach Wilson has been really interesting, like hearing what like Matt Hasselbeck had to say yesterday. And, you know, he was like, I have been Zach Wilson. Like, I've been the starter who didn't really earn the job and didn't like have the right leadership qualities and the right attitude about it. And didn't have the fundamentals that I needed to have at the time. And so hearing his perspective was really interesting. And I think that's kind of exactly what's going on in New York. Like, I don't think Zach is never going to be a good quarterback. It's just, he doesn't have the leadership qualities. He doesn't have the fundamentals right now to build off of. And unfortunately, like, if Zach was on the Bears, he would still be the starter, like 100%. Cause that's not a good team. Like, they're tanking essentially. So they would just let him continue to learn and develop and grow. But the Jets are, I think they kind of surprised themselves that they are like not in the position to be doing that this year. So if he was anywhere else, I think he would still be the starter, but he's kind of Zach Rosenblatt, who I work with, said this originally. I think he was the first person to say this. And I was like, that's so true. He's like a victim of his own success, of the Jets' success. So, you know, the team is like too good to be dealing with him right now.
And I guess the question that I have too about them is, you know, did you know that he was this immature when you drafted him? I mean, because it's not his first year, though. That's where it's really concerning to me, because, okay, yeah, a rookie comes in, he's a little arrogant, he's a little full of himself. I'm the top draft pick. Okay, I know what I'm doing. Nobody else does. That's sort of typical kid stuff. But when you're talking about somebody who's already been through an NFL season and is still acting this way, like, is that something that they're going to be able to fix? I mean, Matt Hasselbeck was able to fix it and got his wake-up call. I saw that segment after Trent Dilfer came in and won 4 games in a row as his replacement. It was like, oh, okay, well, it is me. But all the other players want from a backup quarterback is to just do your job. And Mike White seems like a do-your-job guy. He also seems like a guy that might throw you the football a couple times, which this is where the Vikings are, the yin and yang. They give up a ton of yards, but they cause a lot of turnovers. Yeah. They have big plays at big times, good fourth-quarter defense. So I think that, you know, of course, Mike White is going to get a lot of like, wow, this guy did something amazing. But usually the reality of the QB2s is that it's hard to sustain. So they're in a bit of a tough spot because you have a guy who won a Super Bowl, who's your quarterback 3, but is also really horrendous now. Mike White, who they're sort of unsure about. Zach Wilson, who you're sure is too immature to do this job right now. And a defense that is unbelievable. And it seems like a really good coaching staff that could win. It's a very like awkward position. It's something you don't see very often. Usually if a team is in this position to legitimately compete, they usually just have a good quarterback and we don't even have this conversation.
And I feel I'm trying to think of the other years. Well, obviously Nick Foles did not start until very late, almost kind of the same time range probably as Mike White this year. So Although that may have been a little bit later in December.
Later, but, yeah. It was later.
But it's a little, it's kind of comparable. And like that ended up working really well. However, Foles at that point, I do believe, had a lot more starting experience than Mike White does right now. So I think that is the concerning thing about Mike, is I just think he doesn't have enough regular season playing experience to feel like he is the reliable guy that Nick Foles ended up being for the Eagles. However, like when Trent Dilfer won, what was his experience before? I don't actually know his career that well. Did he have a lot of experience before that season?
He did, yeah. So okay. Trent Dilfer was a top draft pick. I think he was 7th overall of Tampa Bay. Okay. And he had one season, I think they went 9-7, but it was very rocky with him throughout his time there. And when he joined Baltimore, he was actually their backup, and it was Tony right. Banks who started that season. I mean, it's an all-time QB2 story.
Right.
And he probably, like, he gets known as sort of the worst quarterback to win a Super Bowl right. until Nick Foles. But he really actually did play well that year. I mean, they just had a couple of games where they didn't score a touchdown and their defense won and things like that. But yeah, Dilfer was kind of the ultimate fringy 500 style quarterback. I think his record for his career is like 58-56 or something.
Okay.
Like perfectly 500 quarterback.
Yeah.
But he had played a lot in comparison, like you're saying, to Mike White.
To Mike. So okay.
Right. So this would be a guy who could go into the playoffs and not be intimidated and,
right.
you know, whatever. Right. I don't know if that's going to be the case for Mike White, if he right. even makes it there, because he could have a great game and then throw 4 picks this week. And then they're scrambling and playing Flacco or putting Wilson back in, and right. then their season comes to tatters. So they're like one of the most fascinating teams because of this.
Yeah. It's like you really have right now. It's like you can make no prediction about if they make the playoffs, who their quarterback would be. Like at this rate, I have no idea, because Mike might play well for 2 weeks and then completely collapse. Cause he got benched after 4 games last year for Flacco. So that might happen again. It might be Joe Flacco in the playoffs. And I was thinking about like, Case Keenum as well, like his year in Minnesota, but he also had a more starting experience at that point than Mike White has. So I don't know. It's going to be really interesting, but I do think he has, like, from talking to him for like 30 minutes, I do really think he has like the leadership skills, and he's got the support of the locker room for sure. I don't think he's going to lose it. Even if he plays poorly, like I think they like him and they think he's like responsible and mature and knows his stuff. And from my conversation with him, it just seems like he's like, you know, he's got the typical like backup personality where they're just going to work really, really, really hard and not blame anybody else. And yeah, so I think he's like mentally completely ready to do this and handle it. And he's been in New York for a long time, like since 2019, I believe, which doesn't feel like, okay, 4 years, but like, that's actually a very long time to be with the Jets, because he's been through 2 different coaching staffs. I think he's had the same front office the whole time, but he's survived a coaching change there. He's seen the Jets. He was part of the 0-13 start team in 2020. So like he's been through a lot there. And I think he's got a really good understanding of like how the team operates, like the dynamics of the locker room, all of that. So my conversation with him, I like, was like, okay, like this guy's like, you know, he's like ready for this moment. And obviously we talked before he was promoted. So we didn't actually get into, oh, now you're the starter. What are you going to do now? But yeah, I think it was interesting. And one thing that I thought was a very interesting part of the discussion that I'm always thinking about is the dynamics of a quarterback room. And so they have Joe, they have Zach, they have Mike, who have all started games for the Jets going into this year. And Sala in training camp said, we have 3 starting quarterbacks. I like feel strongly about that. And everyone who listens to this is going to be familiar with the adage of like, when you have 2 quarterbacks, you have none. And what does that mean for the Jets? So I asked him that question. I was like, what do you think about that? And he was like, I was like, is it possible to have more than 1 starter in the same room and like work together in like a productive, functional way? And he was like, yeah, it can be when you have the right people in the room. And obviously he said, I think we have the right people in the room, but he did give kind of an interesting answer about how like nobody can have an ego. Everybody has to be like knowing their role and doing their role. And we're all here to help whoever the starter is. And he was like, doesn't matter if like Joe is a starter or, you know, if I was the starter. So he seems to think that this setup is going to be okay there. So it'll be interesting to see how it plays out.
Tis the season for you to buy the best Minnesota sports themed apparel in the world for all of your friends and family. Go to sodastick.com. They have great holiday shopping deals there and use the promo code INSIDER. That is SOTASTIC.com, code INSIDER for all of your holiday shopping. I'm guessing by the fact that Zach Wilson was not even the backup that he did not do his job that week. I'm guessing
that
probably not. And I'm sure if you're Joe Flacco, you're like, I have a ring. How is this guy starting? It's a, I mean,
Joe,
like
there's no way Joe can be happy about his position.
Right.
I mean,
how could
he's
he be?
He's probably able to compartmentalize that. So like, it doesn't affect their quarterback room. And so like, Mike is like, oh yeah, Joe is totally chill. Like, because I asked him about like getting promoted over Joe, and he was like, "Yeah, it's been fine." But there's no way. Like, if you were to really ask Joe, I'm sure he's like, "This sucks."
Right. Like, how is this possible that I was, you know, raising a trophy not that long ago, less than a decade ago?
Right.
But he was completely washed though, having seen a couple of the games earlier this year. So they might as well roll with Mike White and ride that wave. Before we wrap up though, I have to go through my top backup stories of
Love
the entire
it.
Season. And a lot of them have some Viking connection to it, strangely.
Yeah,
so
haven't the Vikings like played every team with a backup?
It's amazing. I mean, yeah, I guess like how backup-y is Andy Dalton would be a question. Like, is Taylor Heinicke better than Carson Wentz at this point? Possibly.
Yeah,
but you know, so there is that question. But yes, they've I was almost surprised that Mac Jones instead of Bailey Zappe played,
which
may have ruined one on the list. So, all right. Well, it starts out the number one. I'm just going to go from number one down because it's not that important. Jimmy Garoppolo is number one on this list.
Yeah.
The best backup story of the season. Maybe one of the best backup stories ever, depending on how it goes, because they've got a chance to be a legitimate Super Bowl contender. What is just your thought and analysis on what has happened here with San Francisco? I mean, I'm very impressed with Jimmy Garoppolo because I think he could have just been like, oh, no, I don't care about this. And instead, it's like, let's go win. I think that really shows some serious professionalism. At the same time, it's like San Francisco, you had a quarterback that took you to the Super Bowl and maybe you overthought it a little. I guess I get it. So I don't know, like even what happens with Jimmy Garoppolo and Trey Lance's future. It's super fascinating.
There's so many things that like I don't understand about this entire situation. Like, it's just so weird because in training camp, I remember Peter King literally wrote in his column, it was so interesting. He was like, yeah, Jimmy is like practicing by himself alone, like two fields away while the team is like in meetings. And then when they go to practice, he leaves, like he doesn't even go to meetings. So that was like the structure of the off season. Like he was not on this team. Like he was on this team, but he was like effectively, absolutely not on this team. They were very much moving on, and I think he assumed he would also be playing somewhere else. And so it is really, I mean, he should be teaching like a master class for quarterbacks or something because I mean, I would be pissed at the Niners. Like they just like threw me aside after like I've done nothing but like win games for them. Like I can't remember his record right now, but it was like 50 and something. I saw it on Twitter yesterday, but
it was good. It's good.
It's very good. It was like 50 and like, I don't know, 17 or 18 or 19 or something like that. Like it was a very good record. And I think it's easy to pick him apart, but when it comes down to it, like they could win games with him. And I totally understand like drafting Trey Lance, and just hoping that you can have this really elite athlete and see what he can be as a quarterback. Like I understand that, but they did give up so much for him that if you think about like Mike Sando at The Athletic wrote this maybe like 2 months ago, earlier this season. He was like, think about everything the Niners could have done with the picks that they used on Trey Lance and how they could have supported Jimmy G. And this was before the Christian McCaffrey trade that he wrote this. So at that point, like, they were kind of struggling still. And so, I mean, Jimmy was their quarterback, but like, they were kind of growing and trying to figure it out because, like, obviously he had not practiced with them like during training camp.
He didn't even make the trip to Minnesota when they did joint practices. He wasn't even there.
So crazy. Like, I'm trying to think of a scenario like that where like a quarterback was on the roster, but was not involved. And I can think of Deshaun Watson in 2021 last season with the Texans, but he never played. He didn't come back and play. Like, he never returned to that team and they never embraced him again. But that's like essentially what the Niners had to do. And so I think it was a very smart business decision for them to work it out. Like, it's worked out very well, but I am really amazed by Jimmy's like attitude about it all, because I would have been like, no, fuck you guys. Like, I'm not coming back. Like, so yeah, it's been amazing. And obviously, like, since getting Christian McCaffrey, like, that really helped him out. And I think too, like, before the narrative was like, oh, how is Jimmy holding them back? But I think this year Shanahan has schemed it in a way that, like, Jimmy is like I was Connor Orr actually today at Sports Illustrated has something about Jimmy that I was just reading before this. And it was interesting. Like, he's, you know, kind of comparing how, I guess he has like the shortest, or he's got the, oh my God, I don't know how to phrase this stat, but like throwing yards, he throws behind the sticks more than anybody else. I don't know what the stat is actually called, but that's what it means essentially. And so, you know, he's kind of like looking at how he, how his stats compare to other quarterbacks. And he also has like the highest, obviously, like yards after catch production. I think it's like 60% of his passing yards are yards after catch. So like, you could just see in those ways how Shanahan is like using him even better than he has before, and sort of like coaching Jimmy's weaknesses almost to be like a non-factor. Even when he does make mistakes, they're not affecting the Niners in ways that they used to. So, it's just really, I do agree. This is the number one backup story of all time. And I can't wait to see who signs him next year, because he's going to be playing somewhere else, I think, and like as a starter for, you know, that's actually at training camp.
So I think if we're talking all time, it could end up there if they go to the Super Bowl.
Yeah. If they win a Super Bowl, yeah.
Kurt Warner's tough to top.
Yeah.
As far as the all time backup story.
Yeah.
But it literally would be up there. Jeff Hostetler taking over in the playoffs for Phil Simms, beating the 49ers and Bills. Like, there's a lot of great ones, but man, Nick Foles, obviously, you mentioned, this would go right up there because of how awkward and strange that was.
So
and
weird.
41-19 is his record as a 49er.
Oh, 41-19. Okay, yeah. Great. Yeah, I was close. I was kind of close.
Yeah. I mean, that's
15-17.
You're winning twice as often as you're losing, and you're just like, no, we need a new quarterback. It's kind of strange how that played out, but I got it though. He was injured the season before,
yeah,
and he had been injured two of the previous 3 years. So maybe right. They thought like, this guy's going to be hurt all the time and we should just get a real athlete. But I also think it sat in their mind that they had the lead in the Super Bowl and he needed one throw and couldn't make that throw, which may end up very well being the case in the playoffs again. It was last year, so he's not perfect, but usually that quarterback has a job and isn't sitting on another field. So we can run through these a little faster, but Taylor Heinicke, we talked a little bit about, that's my number two, coming off the bench after they traded senselessly for Carson Wentz, and then Heinicke is able to win with them. Cooper Rush, let's not forget Cooper Rush though. Like, this man deserves his flowers. That team is a legitimate Super Bowl contender, and they were able to hang in that race in a tough division because of Cooper J. Rush. What's his middle name? I'll find out what you're talking.
I was like, is J his middle initial?
I don't know. It might be.
Yeah, no, that was exciting. That was cool. And I think Kellen Moore has like a lot to do with that, because he's a very smart offensive coordinator and he's worked with Rush for 3 years, maybe more than that. But they've been together for several years. So it's like, he knows that system. He knows his quarterback really well. And everyone says Cooper is very smart. Mike White was actually in that quarterback room in 2018, I believe. And he was like, oh yeah, Cooper and Kellen are like really, really smart guys. So yeah, I loved the Cooper Rush storyline. That was really fun.
Cooper R. Rush.
Cooper oh, R. Robert okay. Rush. Okay.
Yeah, it was a good guess though.
J is a good guess because so many names start with a J.
That's why I went with it. And yeah. Homer J. Simpson is basically why. Cooper Rush getting cut out of camp though, and then coming back and winning games for them. Really something. Bailey Zappe, I think, like, how funny is the very brief, maybe Bailey Zappe's our real quarterback. Like, that is a motif for backup quarterbacks where it's like, could this guy be? And there's like, oh no, he couldn't. That's Bailey Zappe.
The typical like Belichick, like not giving any information about it. And being like, oh, I don't know. I have to see how practice goes this week. And then like, it's Mac Jones the next week. It's like, yeah, okay, we know. That was fun though. And I think we'll see more of him. Like, I don't think this is the last of Bailey Zappe. I think he'll be back in some version.
Maybe he is a bass player for a jazz trio or something. Like, that's a Bailey Zappe sort of sounds like to me.
Yeah.
Does Geno Smith count in this? I think he does, yes, right?
100%.
He won the starting job, but I think he still counts as a QB2 story.
Yes, he absolutely does. And I requested him for my show. I haven't actually heard back from the Seahawks. I need to follow up. But I don't know that he would do it because I feel like he's the type of guy that's like, I mean, I've heard him say this before. Like, he's like, I never thought of myself as a backup. But that's why I want to talk to him, because it's like, how can you keep the hope alive for like so many years when you are like not given the chance and like nobody sees you that way except yourself, like, and maybe your agent. So how do you keep pushing on and thinking like, yeah, I am going to get my shot. I'm going to be able to do this. And he's definitely a backup story, and he's probably for this season. I would say he's up there with Jimmy.
Okay, that's why I had to ask, because I'll put him number two behind Jimmy if we count him as a QB2 story, which I guess we should. I mean, they traded for Drew Locke.
Yeah.
I guarantee you that people in their front office were hoping that Drew Locke won that job. And they're like, oh, okay, fine. Drew Locke's not any good. But maybe 11 years from now, he will be. I guess we'll find out.
Right.
Jacoby Brissett being painted as the nicest guy in America. Good for you, Jacoby Brissett. He came in and didn't play too bad. Like, that's fine. After this, Jacoby Brissett handling that absolute tire fire of a situation with class, playing good football, winning a handful of games. That man will have a job until he is 47 years old. He is the new Steve DeBerg. He'll be around forever. Good for you, Jacoby Brissett.
I hope he can get out of Cleveland personally, just because I can't support that organization. But yes, he did a good job. He did a very good job in the weirdest, worst, most terrible dynamics ever. And good for him. He can compartmentalize. And yeah, I hope for better for him, where he can go play somewhere where he doesn't have to answer questions about what the starting quarterback did.
Yeah. My last one was that time Case Keenum almost played against the Vikings. So that was a big story for a whole week and it didn't happen.
I was so sad it didn't happen. I was actually really bummed. I wanted to see it.
Yeah, I think the Vikings would have stomped them if that had actually happened the way that Josh Allen needed to play to have that game close. But is there any that I've missed though? That was my list. I didn't include Mike White yet because he's got to prove that more than one game.
Yeah, I think you hit all of the good. Oh, well, the Dolphins saga.
Oh,
When Tua got the concussion, and then, I mean, that was a saga because Teddy came in for the next game for one play and then was removed. And poor Skylar Thompson had to go in there. I think was he drafted? I can't remember.
Seventh rounder. Yep.
Okay. Seventh rounder rookie, but he is actually 25 years old. Like, I think he's older than Tua. Maybe not older than Tua, but he's close. So he's like a rookie, but like not really. He's like older in spirit. He had to come in and play, and then he gets hurt, and then Teddy comes in for him. So there was like three games in a row where whoever started the game there did not finish the game. And somehow they made it out of that and are a very good team. And everything was fine. So that was a very unique scenario. I don't know that, like, again, that would be another interesting stat to look up, is like, has any other team for three games in a row with three different quarterbacks, like, who were supposed to be the starters? It was Tua, and then it was Teddy, and it was Skylar, and none of them finished the games that they were starting. So that was kind of crazy.
I know. And Skylar looked great against the Vikings to start the game, and then he got knocked out of it with his hand and stuff. So the fascinating backup quarterback world, and you are literally the only person in America covering it. So,
well, you covered it as well.
I'm more of just send you like heckling DMs about it. Of just like Bryce Perkins season. Like, here we go.
I didn't even like that one. I was like, when did this happen? Like, I hadn't really been paying close attention to the Rams, because they're just
Rams.
I mean, I guess they're interesting in a bad way this season, but I hadn't been paying close attention. Then I was like, wait, who? What is going on here? When did this happen? Yeah.
So follow along with that at The Athletic, of course, and along with all your other tremendous reporting that you do. But this is my favorite stuff. I have to tell you the truth. It really is.
Me too.
I mean, it's part of the Vikings' legacy of backup quarterbacks, whether it's Randall Cunningham or Case Keenum or Wade Wilson or whatever. So I feel like it really fits. But always appreciate getting together with you. It's always a super fun conversation. And we will definitely do it again soon. Maybe when it's Vikings versus whatever backup quarterback in the playoffs.
You'll have one for sure. I feel confident about that because of the pattern so far.
It does seem like a lock. Well, thanks for your time, and thank you all for listening.
Thanks so much.